morning and welcome to Jewish Faith and Jewish Facts. I'm Rabbi Stephen Garten speaking to you from Ottawa, Canada. You are listening to our show, and it is the middle of the Jewish observance known as Passover. But this morning, my guest and I are going to be speaking. Well, perhaps it's not yet Passover, depending on when you're listening to your to this show. But we're going to be speaking about the Torah portion that is read in synagogues throughout the Jewish world this Sunday of April 21st. And this Shabbat is also part of our conversation, as this Shabbat is known as Shabbat HaGadol, which literally translates as the big Shabbat. And it is the Shabbat before the Passover festival begins. So let me give you an overview of this week's parasha. It is from the third book of the Torah, Leviticus. It begins in Leviticus 14 and continues through Leviticus 15. And as with the Torah portion that we read last week, it is certainly one of the more obscure Torah portions that we confront in the five books of Moses. Last week's parasha described signs of the Mitzorah. This is often translated as leper, the leper, but that's a mistranslation. And a better translation would be a person afflicted with a spiritual malady, which places him in a state of ritual impurity. This week's Torah reading begins to by detailing how the individual who's recovered is purified by the priest with a special procedure involving two birds, spring water in an earthen vessel, a piece of cedar wood, a scarlet thread, and a bundle of hyssop. In addition, the Torah portion, which as I indicated is somewhat obscure, tells us that a house or a building can be afflicted with tzaarat, by the appearance of a dark red or green patches on the walls. In a process lasting as long as 19 days, according to the Torah, a Kohen determines if the house can be purified or whether it must be demolished. Ritual impurity is also engendered through a seminal or other discharge in a man and menstruation or a discharge of blood in a woman, necessitating a purification through immersion in a ritual bath known in Hebrew as the mikvah. If you're listening to me and not familiar with last week's Torah portion of Tazria and this week's Torah portion of Mitzorah, both together can sound quite distant from the life that we lead as people of faith today. But with me today is Rabbi Joshua Goldstein, the founding rabbi of the Chai Center for Jewish Life in New Jersey. He is also the rabbi emeritus at Temple Shaarei Shalom in Springfield, New Jersey, where he served as senior rabbi for nearly 30 years. Rabbi Goldstein is an ardent Zionist and has been part of the rabbinic cabinet of the Association of Reform Zionists of America. He was on the rabbinic advisory committee of the URJ Camp Harlem and has served as part of the board of Friends of the Israel Defense Forces. He is past president of the Springfield, New Jersey Clergy Association. And he is one of the most articulate interpreters of Torah that exists today. And so it's a great pleasure to re-invite and re-welcome Rabbi Goldstein to Jewish Faith and Jewish Facts.
Hey, Rabbi Garten, my old friend, it's so great to be on your program again. And hi to all the listeners out there. This must be about my, I don't know, eighth or 10th time on the program, I think.
Well, you're one of the most popular darshanim, and people enjoy listening to your wisdom and your insight. And so it is a pleasure to have you numerous times. We've asked you to comment on a really challenging Torah portion. As I suggested, the two Torah portions last week and this week, which are often in non-Hebrew calendar leap years, read on the same Shabbat, offer us an insight into the Torah's understanding of ritual impurity and ritual purity. And they come in the middle of the third book of the Torah, which devotes itself to a conversation about what is holiness and what is a state of holiness. So let's begin with you helping our listeners understand what is tzaarat.
Sure. First of all, Rabbi Garten, you explained it really well. But I'm going to give you the more academic explanation in one word, and that is yuck, Y-U-C-K. I'm being a little facetious here, but most of my colleagues would say, oh my God, we're in a leap year. That means we have to speak on this portion, this topic, two different times. And if you're like those colleagues, and I am, you know, I sometimes stress about that. What am I actually going to say about this topic of skin ailments and leprosy and rashes and things like that? Last week it was about what happens if tzaraat, a skin ailment, comes into your clothing, I think. And this week it's about what if some sort of skin disease invades your home. Well, today we would call it mold, but our ancestors didn't have the advantage of the medical advances in technology that we have. So I'm going to come back to that last point. Often people say, so why are we reading this? It's a glimpse into the mindset of our ancestors who desperately wanted some explanation. Why do I have this rash? Why is there mold in my house? And of course, the biblical mindset would be, I must have done something wrong. God is punishing me. So instead of stressing about the portion number one, I think we would do well to feel some connection with our ancient ancestors and maybe even some rahmana, some compassion for them, instead of just saying, oh my God, is this Torah portion about yucky stuff? It's really a glimpse into how our ancestors dealt with things that they just could not explain to themselves. Okay. And my major takeaways, I guess, Rabbi Garten, from this are that people would go to the ancient priest, who was the precursor to the rabbi, and they would want an explanation. And the priest would help have them go through different ceremonial rites to cleanse themselves eventually, as you described, Rabbi Garten. But I think one of the things I take away is that clearly the priest's role was not just ceremonial, but it spread out into other areas. In this case, the priest was a health official, you know, the public health official. And that relates, I guess, in looking for applications to our own lives, to the role of religious leaders these days. We have so much on our plates, especially rabbis and cantors and Jewish educators during this past year, which has been such a terrible year. And then the pandemic before that, which affected all religious leaders. And we have clearly seen that, yeah, our role, like our ancient priests, is more than just leading services. It has to do with so many other things. So I think the first thing I take away from this is our traditional role has a long legacy going back to the priesthood. And the second thing I would mention is that when people strain to find out why do I have this? The priest would often say, we need you to leave the community for a period of time while you have this condition. And when the condition clears up, you can come back to the community. That thought doesn't sit so well with those of us who are strongly committed to inclusion. We think that people who are different, who have some disadvantage and health issue, should be brought into our community and embraced instead of put out, instead of asked to be in exile from the community until that condition clears up. But again, I come back to the mindset. Our ancestors were afraid of these things. It didn't have a clear explanation. They thought that if you have a rash, if you touch me, I'm going to get a rash or something like that. There was danger all around. So I tend, Rabbi Garten, to look at this also on a hopeful note, that at least our people wanted to welcome back into the fold those who had some health condition once that health condition cleared up.
So it's interesting that you've identified three very specific aspects of this Torah portion. Let's see if we can delve a little bit more deeply into them. The role of the priest. Now, throughout the end of the book of Exodus and the beginning of the book of Leviticus, we read of the priest as primarily the officiant at the sacrificial cult. And we are told in great detail what the priest will wear and how the priest is chosen through the family of Aaron, the brother of Moses. And we are given great detail about the ordination of the priest into this sacramental role, very much like a priest in the Catholic Church today or any very traditional offspring of the Catholic, the Roman Catholic Church, the Greek Orthodox Church, the Ukrainian Catholic Church, many of these churches, the role of the priest seems to be a direct descendant from the ancient temple priests. But you've asked the listener here to see that the role of the priest goes beyond the sacrificial, that the priest is identified as a healer, but also seems to have responsibility for the welfare of the community. In a way that perhaps doesn't fit with our norm. But the truth is, reading the biblical text from however we want to identify it, either 3,000 years ago or 2,500 years ago, the priest has a sense of communal responsibility and communal well-being, which certainly changes the whole dynamic of how we speak about the priest, yes?
Yeah, I think so. I think your point's well taken. Our cues come from our tradition. And speaking only of the rabbinate here, but I could certainly expand it to all of my non-Jewish colleagues also. The ones who I find to be the most effective religious leaders are the ones who embrace the idea that I have responsibility, not just to my synagogue or my church, but to my community as well. And that can manifest itself in a lot of different ways, but at least if you're able to accept that role, then I think you're not only keeping with biblical tradition, but you're also, you're finding new ways to have an impact on people who may or may not be members of the church or the synagogue. So I think the point's well taken. The other thing I would mention, Rabbi Garten, is it's not just us who strain to find meaning in these portions. In Talmudic times, a Hebrew pun was developed from the Torah portion called Mitzorah, roughly leprosy. And the pun was Motzi Shem Ra, one who brings about a bad name, or in our lingo, gossip. So the rabbis, probably looking for some excuse to not talk about the yucky stuff, you use that as a pretext for talking about the inappropriateness of gossiping and the sin of gossip and how harmful that can be. And sometimes they would even draw the direct correlation between a gossiper and one who is punished by having skin issues. Although, I don't know how far that actually went. But our tradition often looks for other angles, and that's another angle to this beyond the skin issue, that we really should be sensitive to gossip and work against it. Yeah.
So bringing in that rabbinic interpretation, I should remind our listeners that there's a long tradition in Judaism of the ancient rabbis when confronted with the literal text of the Torah and some of the anomalistic aspects of the literal text to be homiletical. Mm-hmm. And in this week's Torah portion, we have this notion of tsa'ara, which is often translated as leprosy, but clearly isn't Hansen's disease as we know of it today. And what would that mean about tsa'ara on the walls of a house? How can you infect a house? And the rabbis, as Rabbi Goldstein has indicated, confronted with what seems so not just yucky, but anomalistic. What could God really mean by an infected house? Wanted to use homiletics to help us understand that gossip could infect a home. And that while the walls may not turn green or red, the house becomes uninhabitable once gossip permeates. And this is part of the wisdom of the rabbis, as Rabbi Goldstein has indicated, that allowed our generation and the generations between the second, third, fourth, and fifth century rabbis and ourselves to continue to find meaning in the Torah.
Yeah.
Without rejecting the literal text and saying, no, 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 that's foolish, this is how we can interpret it.
It challenges us to really look closely to the text and find creative applications, which is what we've been doing for 2,000 years. It just seems these portions jump out at us as much more of a challenge. But I'll give you one specific example, Rabbi Gardner, and maybe this was true for you. Early in my rabbinate, I would sometimes, and here comes a confession, skip these portions and on the Sabbath that they fell on and go to a more palatable portion. But I don't know what changed me, but I came to realize that not only was that untrue, not showing a lot of integrity when it came to tradition, but maybe there were more interesting applications. And what I'm about to, and so when our bar and bat mitzvah students had the, were shown that their Torah portion in 2 or 3 years is going to be about leprosy or skin ailments or whatever it's going to be, I would tell them that in my experience, the absolute best divrei Torah, the best bar bat mitzvah speeches, were invariably the ones for this portion, because this portion basically says, do you want to throw people out of the house? Do you want to be victimized in some way by bullying? Do you want to be a part of that? Or do you want to say, I disagree with the Torah portion. I want to embrace people, even if they are different from me. Our bar bat mitzvah students often said it a lot better than I just said it. But that's one insight that I get from this Torah portion also. And towards the end of my rabbinate, you know, I think I would always say to students who have this portion, you actually have a great gift now. And use that gift in a good way at your bar bat mitzvah and show people, you know, how you apply this stuff.
Lovely. There's so much we can say about mitzvah and this notion of ritual purity. But the Jewish community, as we speak, is preparing for the festival of Passover, and this Torah portion is read on the holiday known as the Shabbat, known as Shabbat HaGadol. And there are two ways that we kind of consider Shabbat HaGadol. One is that it tells us that Passover will take place before the next Shabbat. And tradition indicates that certain historical events have transpired on Shabbat HaGadol. We're going to leave the historical events for a little bit later, but share with our listeners how you find great meaning in this Shabbat known as Shabbat HaGadol. and sure. how you've taught it over the years.
Yeah, I've never neglected to say to people when the Sabbath before Passover arrives that this is a unique Shabbat. Maybe not so much in terms of a change in liturgy, but it is a Shabbat in which we announce the coming of Passover, in case you weren't aware of it, and we challenge people to think of Messianic times. The term Shabbat HaGadol, the Great Sabbath, comes from the Haftorah, the prophetic book that is used in addition to the Torah reading for this Shabbat. It happens to be from the prophet Malachi. And I'm going to read to you the pertinent passages. Lo, I will send the prophet Elijah to you before the coming of the awesome, fearful day of God. God shall reconcile fathers with sons and sons with their fathers, so that when I come, I do not strike the whole land with utter destruction. And here's the key part. Lo, I will send the prophet Elijah to you before the coming of the awesome, fearful day of God. The prophet Elijah, as most people know, is supposedly a part of every Passover Seder. We open the door to welcome Elijah in, and not just to have a sip of wine, but also to herald the coming of better times. And for us in this post-October 7 world, I think this Passover and the Seder and Sedarim coming up, plural for Seders, are going to be such a challenge, because typically a Passover Seder is a joyous thing. But a lot of our Jewish world is hurting right now. They say that when you go to Israel, there's a pervasive feeling of sadness and, just kind of almost like a depression, because we've seen face to face how barbaric humanity can be on October 7. We've seen that instead of a post-October 7 sympathy for the Jewish world, instead what we got was a lot of Jew hatred and anti-Semitism. And we've seen that our students who are preparing to go to college or going to college are thinking twice about it these days and are worried that if I choose one campus, will that be a campus that will be intimidating, maybe even dangerous for me? So all these things have combined to ask ourselves at our Passover Seders, can we still believe in a Messianic age or the coming of Messiah, as Elijah would say, given all that's happened in the past years or not? And my argument would simply be, hope is in our Jewish DNA. We can't get rid of it. That's who we are. And our ancestors in the Holocaust and our ancestors in the Inquisition, there was one thread beyond the tradition that held us together. And that was, we had a mindset of hopefulness. Tomorrow will be better, even if things seem so bleak. It's going to be a tough challenge for us at our Passover Seders to maintain that balance between the joy of Passover and still recognizing the great sadness we have. And I'm going to read, if it's okay with you, Rabbi Garden, one quick reading by our colleague Barry Schwartz called I Have No Words. It'll take about a minute. Words fail and we stand in shaken silence. Words fail and we stand in despairing tears. And then because we are human and because we love life, we try to summon words. Maybe it is the somber verse of the Haggadah that rings truest. And then the Haggadah says, in every generation, they rise up against us to destroy us. In our great-grandparents' generation, they rose up to slaughter us in the pogroms, but the people of Israel live. In our grandparents' generation, they rose up to slaughter us in the Holocaust, but the people of Israel live. In our parents' generation, they rose up to slaughter us in the War of Independence and the Yom Kippur War, but the people of Israel lives. And in our generation, they rise up to slaughter us on the borders and with missiles last week, but the people of Israel live. So with a broken heart and a clenched fist, all I can manage to choke out, the people of Israel live. And I think at our Seders, that's something I want to read. It's sort of uplifting in a unusual way. And other people are going to be doing other things at their Seders. We're going to have a chair with the number 200 on it for the second night of Passover when we have a community Seder here to indicate it'll be exactly 200 days. Since October 7 and since the hostages were taken. And there'll be a lot of discussion. And it's going to be I feel confident that we will be able to have a meaningful Passover Seder because we're not ignoring that subject, but we're applying it within the context of a wonderful part of the year for us.
Of course, some people will remember the Midrash that is offered with regard to the Egyptians who die after the parting of the Red Sea. And that that too is part of our Passover observance, that the book of Exodus tells us that following the Israelites walking through the parted waters of the Red Sea, the Egyptians follow and the sea swallows them up. And the Midrash tells us that the Israelites standing in safety begin to cheer. And God tells the Israelites, why are you cheering? The Egyptians too are my children, and there is no joy in their destruction. And so while so many of us will be in a post-October 7th world, saddened by the rise in anti-Semitism and the events that have made it clear how isolated the Jewish people are, others will want to remind the Jewish people that behold dor vador, in every generation you should remember what it should be like to be oppressed. And that there are people in the Middle East besides the people of Israel who are oppressed, and that there are leaders who have forgotten that their actions have impact. We often criticize leaders on only one side, but the leaders in all countries take responsibility for the behavior that is initiated in their name. And people die and people suffer. Shabbat HaGadol is a wonderful reminder in the sense that Jewish tradition says that King Hezekiah fell seriously ill on that day, and that led to one of the great destructions of the people, the kingdom of Judea. We've covered so much, and I want to thank Rabbi Joshua Goldstein of the Chai community in New Jersey, the Chai Center for Jewish Life in New Jersey, for sharing with us. For Jewish Faith and Jewish Facts, I'm Rabbi Stephen Garten. You can hear our conversation on chri.ca as a podcast or listen to it on CHRI 99.1. I wish you shalom and a good day.